But,
can I get you back a little bit to the type of beat-based music that are made from Fansense that we know you from, and that feature in the book that we did. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your lovely notes and for your example. I noticed that there you're focusing on the beat and on small little snippets of recorded sound. Who influenced you there online? You were talking to me about some guy that you listened to. Who was that?
Yeah, that was Andrew Wong.
Andrew Wong.
Andrew
Spell
Wong.
It there for us.
H-U-A-N-G.
And what did Andrew do?
So, I guess Andrew really kind of blew up on the YouTube scene, as we would say, in about 2015, 2016. And he was just like a bedroom producer. He was making music at home, but he really kind of lit the spark, or he ignited that fire that kind of got Fansense really going. So at around that time, he started producing music with all sorts of stuff, like fidget spinners when they were a thing. He would kind of dive into what was kind of in the now. So fidget spinners. He did a lot of stuff with like water bottles, water itself. And he just started making loads and loads and loads of stuff, and he was like a machine. He was pumping out a Fansense video every week, and it really blew him up. So he ended up with like 2 million subscribers or something, and so he really kind of threw Fansense into the limelight. And I guess for me, I was writing my master's degree in UCC, and I was procrastinating as I always do. And I went on YouTube and I stumbled across Andrew Wong someday, and I just got completely absorbed. So I started watching loads of his stuff, and I kind of went, God, I have to try this at some point. And my housemate had a pug at the time, and my first Fansense video, or my first go at making a Fansense video, was remixing the sounds of a pug's snorts, farts, snarls. And that video just...
Is that on YouTube still?
That's on YouTube, but it really blew up on Facebook. There was a page called Lad Bible, or Uni Lad, that one, on Facebook. And they put it up, and I think at the moment it's 6-7 million plays. And I've been doing it since.
Your videos on YouTube are hilarious and brilliant. I showed your haircut once. You had your girlfriend cut your hair.
Oh, yeah, she's fiancé now.
Fiancé will come back to it.
Fiancé now,
But it's really good, the sounds, the clippers. Mm. It's very obvious. I showed it to people at the PDST workshops, and I think that intrigued them, because it seems to be a very limited source of sounds. Mm. You know, clipping, combing, who would have thought there would be sound?
Yeah.
But you knocked a full piece out of it.
Yeah.
What I'm interested in really is, well, three or four things there connected with that. You don't really, I think, I don't know, go for the timbre, for the specific timbre. I noticed in the notes you gave us and in the book, you're looking for melodic sounds and percussive sounds. They're the two features you look for.
Mm-hmm.
You're not so much looking for, I want a deep sound, or I want, because you do that later. Is that the reason?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I guess with things like that haircut clip, your resources are limited. So you work with what you have, and then I guess, you know, you can kind of classify sounds into those kind of two areas. They can either be pitched, or they can kind of serve a melodic purpose. They can serve a melodic purpose later on in the production, versus something that's percussive, which will be used as percussive material or something to kind of create a beat or a groove. And from there then, you know, things like the timbre, you can kind of create that within a Fansense process. So things like EQing, you know, enhancing or reducing certain frequencies, absolutely. So you can take these kind of limited sounds and kind of tailor them to suit the needs that will meet your expectations or your needs for a piece. So things like, you know, the hairbrush, if you really boost the bass, right there you've got like a kind of a kick drum sound, as you would say, or something that would serve a kind of a deeper kind of an impact, and something that would work in that kind of vein. But then things that might have an inherent pitch, you can re-pitch later on.
Yeah.
And then
I couldn't believe it now, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody wants to listen to the sounds, they're on tracks 147 to 152, 147, 148, 149 tracks that we have at the moment on the current app. It's a drawstring on a blind.
That's it.
And you told us it was melodic, and I wouldn't have thought for a million years that would be melodic.
Yeah.
But in fact, you turned it into two notes, I think, a major third apart. And that's what you do, you look for intervals.
That's it.
You look for.
That's it.
Right.
So it's even just finding one pitch. So for me, if you bring a microphone close enough to a blind, it'll sound almost like a bass string, or the pull string of a blind will sound like a bass string. And from there then, you know, if you can catch that tone, you can repitch it in a digital program such as Soundtrap or Logic or Cubase or whatever is available to you. And yeah, the world becomes your oyster with Final Sense then.
Can I ask you then, the other thing I wanted to ask you, the little piece we have in the book is about 17 seconds long. Mm-hmm. It's not a composition. How would you have extended that? On YouTube, I think your fantastic videos, it's an image thing and the beat is going underneath it. So it sort of structures itself, I suppose, based on the images. I'm not sure how you do it. But hourly, would you produce something and how would you structure it? I mean, would you literally go by ABA or something?
Absolutely. That's kind of my tried and tested method. So for me, just to keep things fresh and interesting, like if it's a 2-minute long piece, it'll get very old very quickly after about 30 seconds. So what I like to do is I have an A, then a B, so two kind of contrasting components of a composition, and then I marry them. So I do A, then B, then AB, and bring the two halves together, and that kind of creates a little bit of magic, I think. So
it's worked for centuries, and why wouldn't it still work?
Yeah, absolutely. It's tried and tested. But yeah, for me, it's establishing one rhythm, establishing a kind of a counter rhythm, and then bringing them together to make this very fun whole entity when they're brought together. So,
and repetition is important.
Yeah.
I mean, we see
it
with Reich. We have it in the book as well with his minimalism. We see an awful lot of repetition, and that's your beat-based pieces tend to be. The beat tends to direct everything, really.
That's it. Yes. So it's a loop-based composition. So I tend to work in 4 or 8 bar loops, 16 if I'm feeling a bit fun. But yeah, usually like that repetition and that kind of repeating pattern tends to be quite favourable when you're listening to, I guess, loopy pieces or percussion pieces, especially percussion. Because, you know, if a percussion loop is too long or too drawn out, you kind of tend to lose a bit of interest and a little bit of drive.
And is that kind of connected with your gamelan playing too? I mean, I don't know anything about gamelan, but is there a lot of repetition in that?
Absolutely. So gamelan music is actually cyclical. So it just goes around and around and around and around with those kind of variations that keep it fun and interesting. So I guess you could say, yeah, it definitely stems from gamelan music. But I guess just when it comes to making techno beats or any sort of computer-based electronic music, loops kind of tend to be
Is it enough to use Soundtrap? I mean, do you go for very expensive studio equipment that would be out of our reach? You know, is Soundtrap adequate?
Absolutely. So we always say that the best equipment to use for any production is the equipment that you have. So for some students, it might be a mobile phone, and mobile phones have microphones built into them that will do the job, and you know, there are free apps available that will serve the same purposes as, you know, this really expensive equipment such as Pro Tools or all of that stuff. So whether you've access to mobile phones, iPads, laptops, those will all absolutely serve.
And Audacity is okay, free software.
Absolutely.
For doing a little bit of editing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Excellent. Can I just ask you as well, sorry for firing all these questions at you,
great.
Synthesizing music in Soundtrap, I saw in a talk that you gave that you were generating sine waves or sawtooth waves or whatever they were. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Do you generate many sounds yourself, or why do you feel the need to do it? Is it when you can't find a sound acoustically and go electronic?
No, absolutely. I guess when it comes to making found sound stuff, I kind of try to limit myself as a discipline to whatever resources are made kind of available to me. But I guess when it jumps to synthesizers, synthesizers are great. They're in a whole other world to the whole found sound beat making process. But if you understand how a synthesizer works, you can pretty much create any sound from nothing. So basically, synthesizers, without diving too deep into it, they're made of waves, and those waves eventually sound as pitches or notes. And using the different dials and knobs on a synthesizer, you can kind of change the color or change the timbre of a synthesizer. So if you want a nice low rumbly synthesizer, you can just dial in the knobs and dials to create that sound. If you want something kind of high pitched and squeaky, there are certain ways to do that. So it kind of offers itself as a whole other tool.
Yeah, and a support really for your acoustic.
Absolutely.